Hazrat Zainul Abideen Rahmatullah Alayhi, when he used to don the ihram, and when the time used to come to say Labbaik Allahumma Labbaik, a quiver and a shiver used to run down his spine. He used to turn pale with fright and with fear. And when they used to ask him that, oh Zainul Abideen, why is this happening to you? Why cannot you say Labbaik Allahumma Labbaik as easily as we are saying Labbaik? What is difficult in saying Labbaik? He says, I cannot say Labbaik that easily as you are saying it, because I am afraid that the reply must not come from Allah. La Labbaik wa la Sa'daik. Ha, these people who had so much of piety, so much of taqwa, so much of muhabbat and love of Allah Ta'ala, and so much of khawf and fear of Allah Ta'ala. But they are so concerned that when they are saying Labbaik, at that time they are afraid that Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala must not say that your coming is not accepted. Your coming is not pleasant to me and not pleasing to me. Why? Because the person has come with haram earnings. So something that is extremely important is that that person, he must go with that which is halal. He must go out of his way to ensure that there is nothing haram that he has used in this ticket of his which he has purchased, or in the accommodation of his which he has purchased. Whatever expenditure he will incur in Makkah Mukarramah, Madinah Tayyibah, whatever expenses the person will incur on Hajj, then this person must be very, very careful that he does not use anything that is of haram earnings. Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, he does not accept any kind of charities also which are of haram. Allah Ta'ala does not want us to give plentiful of charities if it is coming through haram sources. Allah Ta'ala only accepts that which is very, very pure and which is very, very clean. Nevertheless, after that he asked him a question. He says that when you entered the haram, there are many things that he asked and many, many questions he put forward, but the time will not allow us to discuss all those questions and all the responses. However, some of the things that will come to my mind, I will discuss with you now. So then he asked him, he said that, did you enter the Haram Sharif? He said, yes, I did enter the Haram Sharif. At that time, again he asked that, did you give up all kinds of haram? To enter the Haram Sharif, what is difficult in entering the Haram Sharif? But at that time, did you give up everything that is haram? He says, or did you make up your mind to give up everything that is haram? In your life, if there was adultery, if there was fornication, if there was cheating and deceiving, if in your life there was abuse of wife and children, in your life if there was abuse of family members or abuse of any person, in your life if there was swearing and cursing, in your life if there was causing harm and damage to somebody's property or somebody's dignity or honor, without justification if that was your lifestyle, that you used to cause injury and pain, that you were a thorn amongst people, your knife of the tongue used to slice at the hearts of people, unconcerned that what kind of pain it is causing to them. If that was your lifestyle before you came for Hajj, now that you are entering the Haram Sharif, did you make up your mind that I have given up all haram? And then of course when you are going to return, then you will make sure that you seek forgiveness from those people to whom injustice had been done, and to return to whomsoever whatever was owing. If not, then as I have mentioned many, many times, that billi ninnanwe chuhe kha karke pir haj ku chali, that the cat first devoured 99 rats, and then somebody told that cat that now that you have eaten up these 99 rats, so therefore the best thing to do is go to Arafat, go for Hajj upon Hajj, and go and shed a few tears at Arafat and at Muzdalifah and at Mina and at the Multazam, and then just think that everything is forgiven and everything is maaf and Allah Ta'ala has overlooked everything. So that is not what Hajj is all about. This person, when he returns now, the sin Allah Ta'ala will forgive. Allah Ta'ala has called to Makkah Sharif for no other purpose but to make Tawbah. Many times I have mentioned this, that for what else does Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala call to Makkah Mukarramah? If you look at all the things that the person does there, it is dua, dua and dua. The person is told that when you are entering into a haram, then there is dua. When you are entering into the Haram Sharif, it is dua. When you are entering into the masjid, it is dua. When you look at the side, when you look at the Kaaba Sharif for the first time, it is dua. And that dua is most accepted. Again at the Multazam, it is dua. Under the Mizab-e-Rahmat, it is dua. In the Mataf, it is dua. after the drinking of Zamzam, it is dua. Behind the Muqam-e Ibrahim, it is dua. On Safa and Marwa, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam made lengthy duas. And then Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, between the Safa and Marwa, duas. In Mina, duas. And Arafat was for nothing but duas. And if you look at Mina again, or Muzdalifah, the night Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, once again, ibadat and dua. So we can see that that place is for seeking forgiveness. That place is to reform and change. That place is where we repair the damage that has taken place to our vehicle of life. That is the place that we repair that damage. That is the place where, by analogy, we will say that that car, which had a lot of dents on it because of smashes and bashes and crashes. So now that those dents are being removed, the person gives the car to the panel beaters so that he may remove all those dents and give him the car back in showroom condition. So Mina, Arafat, Muzdalifah, and especially Arafat, is for no other reason but to remove those dents from the heart of envy, of jealousy, of malice, of greed, and of pride. And after the person has removed all those dents, then he is expected to now drive extremely carefully and not purposely go and smash those vehicles. But when the person still goes on indulging in sins, not only after his return to South Africa or from whichever part of the world that he has come, but in Makkah Mukarramah and in Madinah Tayyibah, when the Haji Sahab and those Hajjads and those women who are making Hajj, when they are indulging in sins upon sins upon sins, then what can we expect? What kind of rahmat do we expect? What kind of changes do we expect in the society? If we have to just look at the thousands and thousands of people who have been for Hajj over the past number of years, from our country alone, let us just go back 50 years and count the number of people who have been for Hajj and see in the lives of those people, leave alone all the others, just those who have got the titles of Haji Sahib and those who talk a lot about their Hajj also, sometimes on radio stations, they're bragging about how they performed the tawafs and how they did this and how they did that. But look into the lives of those people who have been making Hajj for the past 50 years only. Thousands of them have gone, 7,000 per year, 10,000, 6,000, 5,000, whatever number went. Count all those thousands. And how many of them now have five times salat in their lives? How many of them have zakat and fasting in their lives? How many of them restrain themselves from adultery, from fornication, from watching the filth on the television screens? How many of them stay away from all the indecent and obscene and shameless actions and deeds? How many of them have got the sunnats of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam in their lives? How many of them have got honesty and truthfulness in their business dealings? How many of them are kind and gentle and polite and soft-natured in their homes? How many of them have got an extremely good relationship now with their wives and with their children and with their family members? If we have to look at our lives, all those of us who have been for Hajj and we have returned, then we will find that what Hazrat Shibli Rahmatullah Alayhi is asking this murid, how relevant it is that he says that when you went into the Haram Sharif, at that time did you give up all haram in your life? The murid replied that no, that I did not do. He says, well, if you did not do that, that means if you did not give up all the haram, if you did not make up your mind that I'm going to give up all this haram, then you have indeed not made a true Hajj. Then he asked him, he says that you entered Makkah Sharif in Ihram. So when you entered Makkah Sharif in Ihram, at that time did you see the hereafter? Now what a question he posed to him. He says that when you entered Makkah Sharif in Ihram, did you see the hereafter? Now we may wonder that what kind of question is this? The question is very valid, because when you are entering Makkah Sharif in Ihram, then if you have to look at that Haji Sahab who is entering with Ihram, and all the Hajis entering in Ihram, or if you have to look at them at Arafat or Mina, everyone in Ihram, then what is the Ihram? It is a reminder of the two sheets of kafan which will be put on the body of the dead person. The few sheets of kafan that will be put onto the body of the dead person. No designer labels at all. No matter how rich the person was, no matter how wealthy he was, no matter in what kind of mansion or palace the person lived, no matter what kind of a bank balance he had, no matter what kind of a car he rode on, and no matter what kind of business deals he had. But this person leaves the world empty-handed. The only thing that accompanies this person is his actions and his deeds. He makes high all his life. He sacrifices his salat. He sacrifices his akhlaq. He sacrifices the honest and truthful deals. He sacrifices everything just to accumulate. But then when death comes and squeezes the soul out of his body, then this person leaves making, I wasted my life. We don't say that you must not earn. You must go and earn halal rizq. It is a farz after all the other farais. It is compulsory that the person must go and earn halal rizq and sustenance. But he must not consider his business to be razzaq. He must not consider his family to be the razzaq. He must not consider his friends to be the razzaq. He must not consider his farm or his profession to be the razzaq. The sustainer and the provider of rizq and sustenance is none but Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. For some of them he provides through the farming, for some of them through some other profession, for some of them through their businesses.